and welcome back to another Hybrid Squad podcast. Today, I'm on my own. Kev is busy and Sophie, I think, is asleep because of the time difference. And I'm doing this in an afternoon. And I've got a special guest with me who I tweet with on Twitter and I really, really respect his opinion. No, he's not an Arsenal fan. He's a Liverpool fan. So we're going to have lots and lots to talk about. So, Jim, welcome to the Hybrid Squad podcast.
Hiya, thanks for having me on. Delighted to be here.
Oh, thank you for joining me on this very strange... It's Monday, isn't it? I have no clue what day we're on because...
Yeah, I've got a picture of it of the date. So yeah, it is Monday. Otherwise, I wouldn't have a clue myself.
I know. You know what it reminds me of? It's the bit between Christmas and New Year where you don't know what time it is. All you're doing is eating mince pies and drinking wine. And you're asleep at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 2 o'clock in the afternoon and don't go to sleep till 2 o'clock in the morning. It's like that bit of... No man's land, isn't it? It's just...
It is. It's always confusing. Then we've got bank holidays coming up as well, haven't we? So I dread to think how we're going to cope, knowing where we are when they happen.
God, as I was sitting here, I thought it was Wednesday afternoon. I've no idea why, but it's not. It's Monday afternoon. It's the 6th of April. Let's get some routine going here. And I'm really, really pleased you've joined. I don't actually know how we know each other on Twitter. Did I tweet you or did you see one of my lunatic tweets? Or I just don't remember how long we've known each other, but I've always respected your opinion. I love talking to other fans of other clubs and I absolutely adore talking to Arsenal fans, of course, but I really enjoy talking to rival fans, different fans from all over the leagues. And it's a pleasure to tweet with you.
Yeah, I can't remember when we first spoke on Twitter. I mean, It was probably must be a couple of two or three, maybe more years ago now. It must be some time ago now. But I think we've probably got the same kind of approach to our clubs, that we love our clubs, but at times we're thinking, what is going on? Why is this happening? And we've probably got quite a lot in common in that sense, which I think when you start sitting down and talking to fans of other clubs, instead of kind of shouting at Twitter to the troll fans of other clubs, you realise that you do have so much in common. You got into the game for whatever reason. You got into a particular team for whatever reason. You love that team. You enjoy it. You wish you were winning more than you are, unless you're very lucky. Unless you're going through one of those spells, maybe, where you are winning a lot. And it kind of ends up being something that you revolve maybe a bit too much of your life around. And I think we're definitely finding that now, as we've not got anything to revolve our lives around.
I know. I mean, look, we're in a situation where we haven't got a clue what's going on. The whole world is in an absolute sort of meltdown. It's really scary times because I've got a 16-year-old, and normally as a parent, as I said this on another podcast, you've always got the answers, but we don't have any answers at the moment. No one does. Not one person on this planet has any answers of how long this is going to be, what's going to happen to our normal life as it was. You know, is it ever going to be normal again? I mean, the last game I went to didn't have any clue it was going to be the last game at the Emirates. It was against West Ham. I remember the lady sitting next to me saying to me, might not see you again this season. I looked and I went, why? Where are you going? She went, because of the virus. I went, oh, no, I won't get to England. Famous last words, you know.
It did escalate so quickly, though, didn't it? I mean, the last game I went to, ironically, was the Champions League game against Atletico. So I was on double-decker bus from the city centre out to the match, full of Atletico fans. There's a lot of people saying now that should never have happened. The game shouldn't have gone ahead. We shouldn't have had people coming from a part of Europe which was further on in the situation than we were. But it did happen. And even then, though, I think I was a little bit worried. But even then, it seemed as though it was like, am I being overcautious? Am I worrying for the wrong reasons? Am I going to look an idiot if I start shouting and complaining about this now? And a couple of days later, obviously, football finally shut down properly. And, well, we've not looked back, really, have we?
No, we haven't. So, Jim, I haven't introduced you properly. Tell us what you do for a living up in Liverpool.
Well, I, amongst other things, I've sort of got a day job these days where I write computer software, which is kind of the sort of like the more boring stuff, I suppose, really. It keeps me sane. And away from that is I do a lot of writing. And for the last few years, it's kind of fluctuated between sort of computer coding type work and writing about football or podcasting about football. And I think the thing I do most really that perhaps most enjoy is doing the football coverage. So I do have an occasional column in the Mirror, although it's been a while since I've written, to be honest, for the Mirror.
Yeah.
I do a regular podcast now with Anfield Index. So we've got one called Scouser Tommies where we try and, sort of try and give an insight into being a Liverpool fan in Liverpool, in and around Liverpool, because there's a lot of listeners from all around the world. You know, and we just kind of give our view of what it's like, you know, in the city, which can be quite different to what you sort of see in the national and international media. There's sort of little things going on that you don't always notice. And then, of course, just spend perhaps far too much of my time on Twitter as well on the same kind of topics.
Well, it's interesting because I love Liverpool. It's one of my favourite cities. One of my best friends lives up there. He's a mad Kopite. I've got quite a few friends from Twitter, Liverpool-based Liverpool fans. I've got London-based Liverpool fans. You are quite a big supported club all over the world, aren't you? Yeah. And whenever I come to your city, and I know Southerners don't believe this unless they've been, it is the most beautiful. The people I love, everybody I ever meet is always so welcoming to me, even though they know I'm a Southerner. The docks and the shops, and I just love the vibe. The minute I come out of Lime Street Station, I love being there. I've been about four times now. And each time I've come, I've gone to Anfield. And each time I've come, I don't think I've seen Arsenal win. I think we drew a couple of times. We nearly won, and then you got a header in the last minutes.
Keep coming then. Make sure you come all the time.
I came when Wenger put Sanchez on the bench and the whole place went mad. Well, the away end at Anfield Road. I think it's Anfield Road, isn't it? Is that where
That's
I stand?
Right, yeah.
They call it Annie Road, don't you? See, I know all your terms. And I learnt about Scouser Tommy from you, I think, or one of my other friends. And I just feel that, you know, look, we all know what social media can do. It is a wonderful platform, but can also be awful as well. So your fans have a reputation for being cocky, yeah? I see it as slightly just being confident and adore and love their team. Exactly like Everton fans. You're no different because you're both Scousers, yeah? Evertonians love their team as much as you love your team. You've had, obviously, the greatest success completely since... I mean, when I was growing up in the 80s, we could never beat you. You were like a fortress. Until that night of the 26th of May 1989 when we came and we beat you. And anyone listening to this pod will know I have to mention that if I'm talking to a Scouser. But I mean, I hadn't been back to Anfield since 1989. I hadn't been back to Liverpool, and I didn't really get to Liverpool on that day because of all the roadworks and all the traffic and everything. We went straight to the ground and I didn't even see Liverpool, but as a city, as a people, I think you're amazing and I love it. So, but on social media, there is a lot of, look, there's a lot of idiots at every single club on the planet. You know, you can't, I can name quite a few at my Arsenal club, to be honest, my club. But what I do enjoy, and I know I'm going to get slaughtered for this, I love the fact that you're cocky. I love the fact that you're confident and that you always think you're going to win. I love that. I mean, and the football you've played this season, which will lead us on to where we're going to start chatting, has just been amazing. I've always had great respect for Liverpool. I've never had any issues with the club or the fans or the team growing up through the 80s and 90s. Like, obviously I do with Tottenham because that's my local, rivals. I always hated Man United. Always.
Funnily enough.
Yeah, funny enough.
So did I.
Yeah, so did you. See, it's funny. Whenever I talk to my Scouse mates about this, I go, who do you hate more, United or Everton? See, Arsenal fans don't have that. It's Tottenham. That's it. There isn't any else. Although younger fans now despise Chelsea nearly as much. That will never be number one for me. It'll always be Tottenham. And Tottenham will be for us as well. But growing up, you know, through the 80s and watching your football, and I mean, Arsenal were like 8th, 9th, 10th. We weren't anywhere near until George Graham arrived. And actually, 33 years yesterday, we beat you at Wembley in the Cup. Do you remember Rush's record and Charlie Nicholas and all that?
Yeah, I do. I was just thinking earlier on, actually, I remember going to that game at Wembley.
So was I.
Full of confidence, assuming that we'd win when Rushy scores, right, it's in the bag now. And then obviously, yeah, it didn't happen.
But that's the thing, isn't it? See, you will wait. See, as an Arsenal fan, I can tell you, and I can't speak for everybody, but I go to matches never thinking we're going to win. I mean, it's not that I'm completely pessimistic. I just know Arsenal so well. You know, we came up to you, I don't know if it's 4 years ago, 3 years ago, wherever it was, and we were winning 2-1, and we all just looked at each other and went, well, it's going to come. That is Arsenal all over. That's how we feel. We're gonna do an Arsenal. Yeah, we did. You scored a header in the last minute and you got a draw. You didn't lose the game at Anfield. But watching you over the years, and obviously then, you know, you didn't win a Premier League. You haven't won that. And then we get to this season. Sorry, let's go to last season. Yeah, we get to last season and you were so close. Absolutely. You and City were above everybody else and it was a great contest to watch. Then you get to the Champions League final where every single Arsenal fan on the planet was a Liverpool fan. I can't tell you how sick I felt. I was probably more nervous than you Liverpool fans, if I'm honest. I had lots of friends out there in Madrid who had the best time. I saw videos and photos and it's what football was all about. And to be honest, I did speak to a lot of Tottenham fans on the way back when they were on the way back saying how great it was. You know, mixing with you lot, it was a great atmosphere. There wasn't any trouble. It was just a brilliant day out. And obviously, the rest is history and you go on to win your sixth. It's six, isn't it? I don't even know why I'm asking that. My friend will just laugh his head off because he's only ever said six to me since that day. and, you know, and then we come into this season and on my podcast back in August, I said you'd win it. I said you'd win the league. And I'm not surprised that you've literally romped it. And then we get into January. Was January a bad month for you or was it February? I can't remember.
I can't even remember what month we're in now. No, I think February is when it started to kick in. We started to struggle a little bit then.
I mean, struggle, but you were still, I think you would have picked up. I think the next game when you were going to play and then obviously it all got cancelled, I think you probably would have started winning again. You weren't under the cosh, were you? You were still quite a few points ahead and everything.
Yeah, because I think that was it. We lost in the Champions League, we lost in the FA Cup and we lost one league game, I think. And that was so in that space of games, it felt like a lot of losses. But in terms of the league, there was only that one game where we lost ground, I suppose.
Well, look, as a writer, as a journalist, as someone who's followed Liverpool their lives, you know, we know that lives are being lost at the moment and it is horrific. It is awful. But we need to talk about the season and we're going to talk about the players as well. You know, no one's going to be happy with whatever the Premier League or the FA decide. Everyone's going to have a different opinion on what should happen.
Yeah.
Should we continue the league? Should we make it null and void? Should we start again when this is all over? Football is not important. Of course, football's not important. But we do have a, what's that word? We do have a sense of football fans around the world want the seasons to be concluded, want an answer. And we haven't got any answers at the moment because obviously we're deep in it and it is an awful time.
I think that's one of the issues, isn't it? We don't know, do we? We don't know how long it's going to go on for. We don't know what's going to happen next. So, is it going to get even worse than it is now? Is it going to get better before? It's never going to just go straight away to how things used to be. How long are we going to be in a kind of transition period? And I think that's the one thing that kind of gets missed in all the conversations about what should happen next is we don't know when we can actually implement whatever we do next. If it was going to be at the end of April, everything was going to go back to normal. We've kind of lost 6 weeks. We could run the season 6 weeks late. We could still be sitting here in September waiting for a game to be played. So yeah. I think what we need to do is kind of personally, and I know I am obviously going to be biased to some extent. I think we need to kind of, you know, have a few ideas in mind, but really because we don't know how long it's going to take, I don't see an issue personally with saying, right, when we get back to it, we'll carry the season on as if it had never stopped. We'll take it, you know, we'll see how long we can get it done in, preferably with fans. But if that's not going to be possible, then maybe without fans, and get the season finished. Then we decide what's going to happen with the following season. It might work out just nice because the World Cup's in winter rather than in summer. And maybe we can have our seasons to run so that the season ends just before that World Cup when we get to it. Maybe we need to do a sort of half season or a, I don't know, with playoffs, who knows? I just, there's lots of answers. And I think, you know, in the future, when we all look back on it, if we're still around in the future,
yeah.
If you look back in sort of 20 years from now, there'll be little footnotes in the history books. There'll be little asterisks at the side of it saying, you know, there was something unusual about this season. And, you know, maybe we'll remember why there was something unusual. And whatever comes out at the end of this, I do think, we're not half going to need some football to get us back feeling happy again, because this has been difficult for everyone in terms of financial reasons and, of course, in terms of worrying about themselves and the loved ones. So we're going to need something to cheer us up. And even though football can do the exact opposite at times, I think football is one of the ways to get some smiles on faces again.
It's very, very true. From my opinion, it's tough, isn't it? Because they can't hand the league to you because mathematically you haven't won it. You've got relegation. You've got European places. I mean, we started playing a little bit better. We may have hit fifth place, you know, to get it. It may have even hit fourth by the end of it. We had Arteta come in. He started to change things. Every club can say, well, we might have got here. I've never ever felt sorry for the Premier League and the FA. I've never, but I honestly, I don't think they can win. And you're right. There is far more important things going on at the moment for anyone to get het up about what's going to happen with the season. We do have to wait and see how it pans out in this country. And first of all, it's getting everyone healthy and getting back to work and, you know, and just surviving basically, because it's going to be a tough time.
It is, yeah. I mean, there were some people saying that Tottenham were kind of hinting that they wanted the season to be cancelled. And the reason being that if they kind of cancel the season and start again, that financially they would be better off because there'd be more chance they could try and get in the Champions League and so on. But then you hear the news that if the season's cancelled, then a lot of the prize money's not going to come. You know, a lot of the sponsorship money's going to be cancelled. Fans could even, I reckon, put a class action suit together and claim money back for what they've paid for tickets if you really wanted to take everything to its logical conclusion. So all of a sudden it kind of seems to be the mood seems to have changed away from cancelling the season in some quarters. I just don't think many people who've given strong opinions on it have really kind of done it in as impartial a way as possible. And I do think that my view as it is now could change. You know, if we're still like this in 6 months' time, I might just, you know, I've no idea what I'll be thinking about what should happen with the season. But that's the thing. We don't know how long we're going to be.
Exactly. It's a tough one, isn't it? Because it's something that we've never, ever experienced in our lives before. I mean, yeah, thinking about it, I would be due a refund if they did that on my season ticket from the West Ham game onwards. If they don't play those games, I've paid for it. So yeah. I don't know. I mean, look, at the moment, it's not even an issue. The issue is just getting everyone well and keeping everyone well. That's for sure. And surviving. But during all that, so I was working up to, 10 days ago. I don't know if I'm on this what day, because I don't know what day it is. I think it's just over a week ago. And I was furloughed. So I can't work. I'm only getting 80% of my wages, which isn't great. And I'm now at home. And the government are helping. The government brought in this scheme to help. That's for sure. Which now leads me on, and I'm sure you know where I'm going with this.
Of course.
To the fact the first club I think did it, and I'll probably get it wrong, first couple of clubs were Newcastle and Tottenham and Norwich. Yeah? Absolutely can't believe Tottenham. I cannot believe it. And this is not my biased, okay? Because if Arsenal do this, I'll be saying exactly the same. And it would not surprise me with our American owner if Arsenal do this. Newcastle, well, Mike Ashley, what can I say? Norwich, I don't know too much about. And then all of a sudden in the news over the weekend, Liverpool, your club, are going to furlough the non-playing staff 80% but pay the other 20% so they don't lose out. So in effect, your staff don't lose out, but us taxpayers are paying that. Can I ask your view on it?
I just think, yeah, straight away, it's not the right thing to do. The only way... And I think this would have got a lot of support from Liverpool fans would have been if Liverpool had said, look, the government's offering this money. We've got an uncertain future. So what we're doing is we're going to furlough these staff. We're going to take advantage of that scheme. We're going to top it up so they get the other 20%. But then the money we get from the government, we don't want to just use that to make our profits, you know, keep our profits as healthy as they are. We want to use that in a good way. Maybe even say we'll match it. We'll double that amount that we get off the government and then go and put it into good causes, if you like, that maybe the government have up until now tended to ignore. I mean, food banks is the one that jumps straight out at me because in my view, we shouldn't need food banks in this day and age. We shouldn't have needed them before all this, the virus kicked in.
Yeah.
But we do need them. We need them perhaps more than ever. And so they could have done something positive if they were going to take that money. But even that would have been a controversial step. But then again, you know, at least it would have been a controversial step, but they were doing it for good, sort of pretty fairly honourable reasons, if you like, although I'm sure some would disagree even with that. But to just say, right, we're laying these staff off. Yeah, we've been really good. We're going to pay the other 20%. Yes, that's nice. But there's companies out there I know, and you may be the same yourself, that literally can't afford to pay that extra 20% because...
Yeah.
You know, they have not got the money coming in. I mean, wages are only one cost of running a company. There's companies there that have got rental costs to pay for equipment. They've got rental costs for accommodation they're using. They've got all kinds of other costs. They'll still need some staff to do some work to maintain such schemes as well. So they can't furlough everyone necessarily. And then, paying the 80%, they'd love to top it up. They would love to top it up. I know that there's some really good companies out there who were struggling, people in tears who were running companies, and they can't do it because obviously they're not in a position to do so. And if people like Liverpool and companies like Liverpool and some of the other major companies in the country weren't doing this, maybe the government could say, you know what, we've not had to pay out as much as we thought. There's a bit of a pot left over here. Maybe we can go and top it up for some of these places where there is a struggle. You know, maybe in some places, they could pay 90%. They could make a difference. But the thing is, you know, clubs like Liverpool, corporations like Liverpool shouldn't be doing it. And I think when it came to my head when Liverpool first got taken over by American owners, that we're starting to see things written about Liverpool from Liverpool where the word club always had a capital C. And you started to realize it was very much a corporate thing. It wasn't club the way I see club. The club is the thing I grew up supporting. It's not something you can buy. It's not something you can sell. It's something that's made up of all of us. You'd be the same with Arsenal. It's the soul of your club, if you like.
Mm.
And whoever owns the club, I mean, they've even used the words themselves in the past. They are just the custodians of this. To own Liverpool, you've got to own what Liverpool's about. Liverpool isn't about that. This isn't what Liverpool does. It's not the way Liverpool as a city wants to treat people. The fact that they thought they could just do it and not get any backlash was the most worrying thing, because up until now, we kind of thought they understood the city and the people and the way we are. We're not getting into politics, saying about a sort of socialist outlook from Liverpool. That's not necessarily political. It's this thing about looking after other people who are in a worse position than yourselves. It's always been the way in the city. And if people do well, people are praised for doing well. They're glad you've done well. And then more often than not, the people who do well do help others. And it's just this way of doing things. And the way the club have done it just felt alien. And the backlash, I've not seen one Liverpool fan come out in support of it, which tells you quite a lot, which, you know, there's always someone who'll support the owners no matter what they do. And they've had an easy ride for a few years because things have gone well. But I think this should be ringing alarm bells over in Boston. But so far, I've heard nothing from them since.
It's really interesting. A friend of mine sent me in this question. Well, it's a rant. Okay, and then he's going to ask you a question. He said, you need to tell him from this Liverpool fan that I'm disgusted that the club have taken the furlough decision and that they've embarrassed all the Liverpool fans I know. It's particularly sad as they've got so much right over the past few years. I suspect they have also embarrassed Klopp and the players. The only way they can put this right is to reverse the decision. Our CEO is a good guy who engages with the fans but has gone quiet, so I expect it's an American decision. Then he put rant over. Then he said, do you think... it's a US-based decision. And do you think that... Hold on a second. Does he think it's a US-based decision? And it's a bit clumsy for Peter Moores, our CEO.
I think it's a US decision in the sense that the club is being run the US way. They've put the people into the club to make big decisions. I can't imagine this one being a decision that was made without being run by the owners. I mean, there's going to be things that happen day in, day out that the owners aren't kind of informed about because they can't micromanage to that extent. So people are going to be trusted to do jobs and get things done a certain way. But I really can't see something like this being something that would bypass the US members of the board. This would have been discussed at a board meeting. This would have been discussed at the highest level. I mean, Peter Moore is a great guy. I do wonder sometimes, without being disrespectful to him, whether he is more of a figurehead than anyone with any real power. I mean, I know he has nothing to do with transfers, so sometimes you'll get abuse off fans because we've not signed whoever the latest flavour of the month is, which is standard. And I know he'll say he's got nothing to do with him. He doesn't know who we're signing, you know, until it's done. That, you know, he's kept out of the loop. He doesn't want to be in the loop. It's not his department, basically. And I imagine some of this decision is not down to him either. But as that figurehead, he should understand what the club's like. He should understand how this decision's would have gone down and really could have managed it better. Because as I said, even if you're going to do it, there's ways of doing it that would make it sound less abrasive and less wrong.
Okay, so that was from my friend John.
Still decided we're not going to do it. But the way they've done it is so blatant.
Yeah, no, yeah. I know. Okay, so that was from my friend John, who's a season ticket holder. And one of my closest friends is Dave. He said, do you think they would change their mind and reverse it?
I think as we speak, I would be very surprised if they're not having those staff who aren't furloughed, of course, if they're not having meetings now and conversations trying to work out how to get out of this. I don't see why they can't afford to reverse the decision. I can't imagine it being, if you think about how many people Liverpool Football Club employ, I know they've got, I think they've got three floors of a high rise building in the city centre. There's some staff work at the training ground at Melwood. There's some staff work at the academy in Kirby, which is where the new training ground is going to be. There's some staff work at Anfield, but we can't be talking, you know, we're definitely not talking sort of thousands of staff who are on this. So I can't imagine the amount of money involved is massive. You know, we're talking about 80% of 3 months' wages for, you know, maybe a couple of hundred people, who a lot of whom probably aren't on that good money anyway. Because without having to go at Liverpool, whenever you do see jobs advertised, they don't tend to always pay the best money, because I think they have this sort of idea that, well, if you work, you'll accept a bit less money just to work for Liverpool. That's the sort of impression I've been given in the past. So the money's not that great. It's the tiny fraction of money for what they spend. I think you can put that into context by saying, you know, if you name a transfer fee that Liverpool pay for the next big player, and you adjust it by £1 million, you kind of wouldn't notice the difference. You know, like the kind of money they're talking about, you'll hear people talk about 76.3 million, 77.3 million. People throw that extra million around without really thinking about it. It's not going to be £1 million that they're losing. They could easily reverse it. If they don't, I'd be surprised, because they're facing a nightmare here. And the thing is, Liverpool fans won't let this go. This won't just go away.
No, no.
The press might get bored of it. Other fans might tone down about it, because there'll be something else, you know, to worry about. But Liverpool fans won't forget this, and it really will go against them. If you remember the way fans walked out the stadium over ticket prices, Liverpool fans can mobilise when they need to, when they're not happy with something. They will mobilise over this, so they really, really need to think about it. An apology, a reversal, do something with it, you know, do something to get out of this mess. But they really need to do it, and they need to do it quick, because the longer it goes on, the more of a vacuum's building up where people are getting more and more annoyed with them. And also, you don't want to give Piers Morgan something to rant on about for an hour, do you, in the morning, which he's managed to do.
Do you know what's interesting? I don't normally agree with Piers, but lately what I've seen of him with regards to everything that's going on in this country in football, I sort of weirdly starting to agree. I know exactly what you mean. It is.
Yeah, you find, Piers Morgan, I find these days that there'll be a day where I agree with him completely and the next day where I don't agree with anything he says. And I think that's because he always takes one side or the other, doesn't he?
Well, he does. But I mean, with regards to what's going on at the moment, staying at home and saving lives, I couldn't agree anymore. And I don't understand why anyone is literally going out for not the sake of it. Have your exercise. Do not. I mean, I could lecture on about this, and I'm not going to, but you really, really need to take responsibility for your actions and stay in and save lives. I can't say that enough. But going back to football and everything, it is a shame. And I think your club has lost a little bit of respect from other fans. Not that it'll make any difference, but I think you've lost respect from your own fans as well, which I was saying to my friend before, Dave, I said, I've not seen one Liverpool fan stand up for your club, which is very strange, except one person who did say it's a business and why shouldn't they do it. And I was like, because morally it's not right. It's just,
I think, yeah, that's the issue, isn't it? Yeah, that's it is a business. Okay, it has to be a business to make money, but it's a business that's built on something. It's not Tesco. It's not Weetabix, the example Tom Hicks would have used.
Yeah,
this is football. It's not the same. You've got to remember that. You'll have no business if you keep treating it like a business, basically, because there's more to it than that.
But it's just so interesting how, for me, I've never, you know, when Liverpool do something, you all sort of, come together, don't you? You're sort of like, yeah. It's you lot against the world. And then this, you're all gone against your club, which I think is great because it's right to.
And it is. And I think, you know what I would like to see as well? I would like to see, look, we've said that about our club, and Newcastle fans have said the same. I'm sure Tottenham fans have said the same about their club as well. Maybe some of them have. As fans, you know, I think the more we unite over stuff like this and say, this is wrong, maybe Arsenal would have been the next team to follow, but the backlash made them think twice, you know. And I think, you know, this is where, as we said, we're not that different from each other as fans of different clubs. We all kind of want the same thing and all have the same principles, you know, and this is going to get the principles of any fan. I'd have stood up with Evertonians, Man United fans, Arsenal fans, if their club had done it before us, I'd have been with them saying, I know how you feel. I would have been just the same.
Yeah.
And I hope, you know, I hope that works the other way around as well. There will be people having a go at us. It's a laugh. It's football. People love to have a go. But from, you know, just remember the fans aren't behind this. And I would imagine Jurgen Klopp and his squad are nowhere behind
that's it exactly either. What John was saying. He feels that they'd be embarrassed by this. Yeah. And also, I mean, with regard to Arsenal fans, our last couple of seasons have just been terrible. We pay high prices. You've got VAR coming in that we just, is not really working for us. And also, you've got our stadium is not full anymore. Arsenal fans were falling out of love with Arsenal. Not all Arsenal fans, before anyone has a go at me, but you could see that the ground was never filled. People were losing their love for going to football. And if Arsenal then furloughed their staff, well, I don't know. I just hope they don't do it, but I can see them doing it. We will. I don't think they really care about backlashes. I'm honest, our American owner, but. I mean, let's just go back a little bit, because the reason I asked your age before is because I wanted to see where you were when I was watching football. And we was obviously at the same, because we're both 50. So we both know what our clubs have been through and everything. And as I mentioned before, for me, my first ever live final was 33 years ago yesterday. And I had one of the best seats ever. I've never experienced such great seats since. But I was on the steps where they used to walk up at the old Wembley. And it was amazing. I literally shook hands with every player. I was I don't know how old I was, 17, 16, I can't remember. But it was just the best day, and it was a complete change for us. That's when it all started, the George Graham era, starting to win things, starting to see, you know, possibility. That was my first live final. Obviously in 1979 when we beat United, I watched that on TV, my dad was there. But, I mean, you had such a different experience growing up to me. Winning a League Cup was like winning the World Cup for us. We hadn't won anything. Like, had gone to Wembley and won anything for, well, it was 8 years. But, again, as I said, I would have only been about 9 or 10. But you were winning, it wasn't called the European Cup, weren't it? It wasn't called the Champions League. European Cup.
When you had to be champions to go in it, it wasn't called the Champions League.
Of course, it was the Europe. Yeah, exactly. The European Cup, you won titles, you won the FA Cup, you won trophy after trophy. So with you lot going to Wembley in 87, of course you're going to go there and go easy, really, you know. But let me ask you, because we need to talk about my favourite match, because if I've got a Scouser on, I have to. On the 26th of May 1989, were you at the ground or were you watching? Where were you?
I actually watched it. Me and my mate watched it at his house. It was impossible to get tickets. I think if you weren't a season ticket holder, quite often you'd get tickets to games because someone gave up the season ticket for a match, or, you know, if it for a big game, you'd sometimes need a voucher. You know, so you'd been to another sort of boring game midweek a few weeks before, you were entitled to get tickets for an all ticket game. And for one reason or another, we just couldn't get near tickets for that game. So we watched it at his house, and we honestly thought, you know, you're thinking, as long as we don't lose 2-0, we've got this, you know, and we'd been through, you know, obviously we're not going into details at the moment, but we obviously hadn't been a nice time in the lead up to it. But for that moment, there we are with that match. We're such a good team. We've done so well. We just don't lose, you know. The thing I remember most was thinking, we've actually gone out here trying not to lose. That's not how Liverpool play. Mm. Liverpool tried to win, but Liverpool weren't trying to win. And this was, of course, watching it on TV. This was in the days before we had the kind of the graphic. You know, now you watch the game on TV and the graphic's there all the way through telling you how long's left. And I can just remember that at the time, they would only put it up occasionally in a live match to tell you how long was left. And they put it up, and they kept it up, and the game was just going on and on and on. And it just felt like it was never going to stop. And then, you know, obviously that was in the time until that second goal went in. Then, of course, time ran out. It was just, it felt like you deserved it on the night, but it was so disappointing.
Yeah, not for me. No, it's interesting, you know, because I mean, I've spoken about it a million times. I'm not going to go on to it, but I didn't actually get tickets till about 4 days before, so I didn't even know I was going. I remember saying to my boss, I mean, you won't know this story, so I won't, at least not boring you. I remember saying to my boss, I've got to go, oh, I can't work Friday. He said, why? So I said, because I'm going to Liverpool. He said, no, you're not. There's not enough notice. I said, no, I'm going to Liverpool on Friday. I said, and I'll be leaving at 9 o'clock in the morning. I was working in London at the time. And he remember saying to me, well, no, you can't. So I said, well, just take my resignation then. I was like this. I was 18. Do you know, I never know. What was it? 89. I was 19. And I was like, No. I'll resign. He was winding me up because he was a football fan and he knew that I would have just left. No, I would have because I was living at home. Didn't have any debt. So what did I care? You know, there's no way I was going to miss it. But it was, they were like the golden ticket to get. And, you know, that I'm not going to go through the whole story again, but there is no way on earth I knew anyone that thought we were going to win. And I don't care what anyone says. The only person that thought we were going to win, and this is legit, is Joel Graham. He actually thought we were going to win. I don't know, because Kevin often talks about this, but I can't remember if Kev thought we were or he was convinced to think he was, because George Graham said, we've got this. And he planned to go in at 0-0. I mean, I love all this. I mean, obviously, there's a film out called 89 for us, and then there's Fever Pitch, which I'm assuming you've never watched. But it is, for us, it was and still is and probably will always be the biggest night of our lives, regardless how old you are, even if you were born. For you, it's not really, is it? Winning the league. You won loads of leagues. The European Cups, you've got six of them. We haven't got any. You know, we tried
once. That's the thing, though, isn't it, though? Like, normally when you win a league title, it's kind of won over, well, 42 games in those days, 38 these days. And you might have a game that clinches it, you know, the game that was tight. But it's not very often that you get a game that's a decider between the two people who can win it. I mean, this was obviously because of the situation. It was played after everyone else had finished playing. And it became a final, which you don't get in the league very often. So I can see why it was so big. I think, you know, maybe as a comparison to go, when we were 3-0 down in Istanbul that time, did we think we could go out and win the game at 3-0 down at half time? I think no. I think we just thought, well, let's try and at least, can we make it 3-1 or maybe even get 3-2? Can we just stop the rot? Can we make sure we don't come away with losing 7-0? You know, and, you know, and I think, the very least Arsenal, you would think, would look at it this way, was, look, don't see, that's a mountain to climb. To win 2-0 against Liverpool without conceding, that's a mountain to climb. But you know what? If we get one, you know, maybe get two. And it's interesting that you know, the idea of staying 0-0 till half time, because it can kind of give some complacency, if you like, to Liverpool as well, can't it? So these psychological battles are something that we don't really, when we're stood on the terraces or sat in the stands, we don't realise some of the stuff that's going on, that, you know, the great managers, they're not just about coaching in terms of skill and tactics in that sense. The psychology is massive. And I think, you know, that's what Liverpool had from managers down the years. And that's
absolutely
George Graham was, 100%.
Your managers down the years, for sure. But it was just so fascinating because I did some interviews for 89 and I spoke to all of them. And when Mickey Thomas came towards me, I went, you couldn't have scored the first shot, could you? I said, when you went through and you missed, I looked at my dad and went, shall we go? So we missed the traffic. Thank God my dad said, no, we're not going anywhere, because we don't ever leave football early. It's not something we do. My dad's been going to football, how old is it? 50 years, 55 years. And it's not something we ever did. And he looked at me like I was mental. Like there was, 2 minutes to go, and he goes, you want to leave? No, we're not leaving. Well, thank God, Jim, because I wouldn't have been there, you know. But, you know, listen, you go back all those years and people always say to me, oh, you live on history. But what else are you supposed to live on? You're there to win trophies. And if you win it in such fashion, and you know, 20 and 30-year-olds of nowadays do not understand how good you were in the 80s. I remember listening to us playing you on the radio and going to my dad, what's the point? There's no point listening. Just a fortress. We're not. So you know, so for us, obviously, it was one of the greatest things. But obviously, as you touched on before, you know, 6 weeks before that, you had Hillsborough. And as a football fan, and I've said this so many times, and as I said, one of my closest friends I had long conversations about this with, who's a Scouser, it's devastating. It's just uncomprehendable to actually the whole, I can't think of my word I was trying to say, but actually the events that took place and what actually happened. And as for you as a City, and I remember you were due to play us the weekend after. That's why our game was later on in May. And I remember writing to Liverpool. I didn't have any Liverpool friends then. I didn't have any. And I remember saying, as a football fan, I'm just devastated for your whole community. I just, you know, I think it touched everybody. And
it was difficult. You know, I remember at the time thinking, in your own way, you didn't realise how big it was until you started to see different things. I mean, even my dad, who had not really been, my dad sort of phoned me up and said he wanted to pick me up from work and take me to Anfield so I could go and have a look at all the scarves and everything that were on the pitch. I didn't drive at the time. I was, you know, 18 or whatever at the time, 19. And I think, you know, he came and picked me up from work and took me because my dad's not really been a football fan, to be honest. He's sort of got a passing interest, but never had the passion I've had. And it hit him. Then I can remember going in work the first day after it happened, and I didn't go, luckily. I mean, again, that season we must have struggled to get tickets for the big games, and we missed out on that one. I was so glad. But I can remember going into work on the Monday, and basically someone who had a similar job to me in another department, there was a couple of thousand people who worked on this site, another Liverpool fan we used to chat when we were wandering around the site, he died. And I can remember going into work and people had heard that someone had died from the company, and people thought it might be me, and the look on people's faces. And again, I wasn't expecting any of that. And it was as time went on, the more and more you realised how big it is, because the thing is, that number of people dying is a number that doesn't sort of make sense. You know, it's too big a number to kind of understand at that state. And it was just, regardless of what caused it, to think of so many people who'd gone and so many people that you knew who'd lost someone. Mm. You know, and every time I look back now, I think of the guy from work and think, you know, his family haven't had what I had. You know, since then I've been married, I've got kids, I've done different things. You know, I've had my whole life, and you know, that guy's family never got that with their son, and that's just one of them. That's just one of the victims. And you know, and what I do remember is the, like yourself writing a letter, the number of scarves there were from other clubs, all over the world. They were all over the place. People were coming from all over the world. And this wasn't a time when you could just jump on an easy jet either. No. You know, there were people making proper difficult journeys, if you like, to come and pay the respects. And I think that told you a lot. And again, this is the thing, football, you know, it's not the tribalism, the stuff like that's all well and good, but there's a line that needs to be drawn. And that could have happened to any club. There's still court cases ongoing about the aftermath. But in the lead up to it, it's quite clear. You know, if the draw had been different, if Liverpool had not got to the semis and another team had, it could have been that other team in that position. And, you know, it should never have happened.
Never. And do you know what, Jim? It's still to this day so upsetting and so distraught for all the families and everyone that suffers and still suffers to this day. And I really don't know what to say. We've done a couple of podcasts with people that, you know, were there and we learnt so much. And I think that when I came on that night, and Arsenal came out with 11 bouquets for the fans, that was so poignant and so, and I remember Lee Dixon saying, you know, he walked out to complete emotion, and once he gave his bouquet to a Liverpool fan, he then turned into football. He turned into that match. And
it had to be, you know, that's the thing. If that had been played in a kind of, you know, if Arsenal had said, oh, we can't win this, it'd be awful of us to win this. It's, you know, they need to win this. We need to give this to them. That would have been, that wouldn't have meant it. Liverpool wouldn't have wanted that, I don't think. You know, we wanted to win or lose fair and square. And I think that, you know, that would have been an insult to those who we'd lost. And I was glad that Arsenal played it the way they did. you know, they played to win. Well, played to win even more than Liverpool did, to be honest.
Well, I just think...
it was football, and that's what it, that's the whole reason they died, because of football. Why not let them, you know, why you're doing disrespect to their memory, if you like, by not keeping it as football on that day. And I'm glad they did.
No, and I think, you know, I don't know what else to say. Just my respects go out to all the families and everyone that suffers. It always has been since that day. I was at football that day when I heard about it and came home and could not believe what I was seeing. And it was just frightening and awful and stuff. And, you know, but as I said, I've been to your city so many times, and I really enjoy coming up there. And I find the people just lovely. Very, very different. You know, as I said to you before, as in a joke, that we don't have breakfast, dinner and tea. We have breakfast, lunch and dinner. But that just seems to be the common joke that I have with my friends up there. But, you know, it's
well, I've started to sort of avoid things going lost in translation. I've started saying breakfast, lunch and tea. We don't even use the word dinner then. We don't have any confusion over which meal we might be meaning.
Yeah, but
everyone gets that.
Yeah, but we have tea at 4 o'clock, cup of tea and a biscuit, right, or something. We have dinner at 6 o'clock or whatever. No, it's funny. Listen, it's just what we're used to, isn't it? And what we're used to is not this way of life. It is. Our way of life has just been halted in so many ways. Even going out and food shopping, it's just a different world out there. And we're all missing our football. We're all missing our normal life. And I just thought it would just be really nice to have a chat about the way you see football. And I knew that you would not agree with what your club have done. As I said, I don't know anyone only one person who sort of sees that why they've done it, and not necessarily agrees with it, but sees why they've done it. There is no answers. We all have to wait and see how, unfortunately, this disease pans out here. And I just wish everyone to keep well and their families and friends well and everything. And definitely come on, Jim, when football's back on. And then we can talk about what decisions were made, you know, because it's going to be really interesting. They cannot win whatever they do, the Premier League, they cannot win. And I just feel there is more to life than football. We need to keep everyone well. I keep saying this, but it's so important. And, you know, and the banter is great. But unfortunately, there's just not much to talk about at the moment. But there is something before you go. I was on a podcast this week and I was absolutely raging. Yeah, this was before Liverpool furloughed their staff, about players earning, some earn 30 grand a week, some earn 300 grand a week. And I feel that they could do more. What they do privately, obviously, we don't know. I know a lot of players help with a lot of charity functions and charities and stuff like that. One of yours, Andy Robertson, I was reading about, he does a lot for charity. My thought is, at the moment, they can't even spend their money. There's nothing to do. You can't buy anything. You can't go anywhere. You can't do anything. So surely if a player's on 150 grand a week, can he not last on 75 grand a week and maybe put that money and help the NHS or help the communities around them? As you said, food banks. There's so many.
That's the interesting one, isn't it? Because The Premier League were almost saying, can you players please take a 30% pay cut? And that was almost as if, so let's just pretend in the Liverpool boardroom, they said, let's get our players to take a 30% pay cut because that's hitting our profits. Because that's the thing, that 30% pay cut, the Premier League aren't saying, and then we'll donate it to the NHS. They're kind of saying, and then we don't, you know, then our profits aren't damaged too much as clubs.
Yeah.
And I think that was the interesting one, that the players were kind of discussing it. I don't know how long it takes. I don't know how it works for different players. I imagine some players aren't on great money. There might be some players whose money's kind of all tied up because they've gone and bought a house that was just a bit bigger than maybe they should have bought. Certainly down the lower, you know, the lower end of the pay scales. But as you say, some are on incredible amounts of money. And yes, they should be finding a way. I mean, you mentioned players like Kevin would have played at a time when the wages were great in comparison to most people in day-to-day 9-to-5 jobs, but weren't enough to kind of set them up for life. Mm. You know, he cannot live off the money he made as a footballer for the rest of his life. He has to find other things to get an income from. And that would be the case for players maybe who retired even up to 10 years ago. The players of today, I mean, this is one of the things, like when you talk about ex-players coming on podcasts, can you see players of today going on podcasts, you know, 10, 15 years after they've retired? Because it's hard to know what they'll be doing, because the kind of money they've made They've no need to get a job in media. You know, they've no need to look for a career as a coach. They're made for life. And even if you take a 50% pay cut for 1 year of your footballing career, you're still going to be made for life at this stage. And I think that's the issue. I think finding a good way to deal with it is important. It shouldn't be used to line the pockets of these American businessmen and these, you know, the people who don't really care about football, that are just in it for the money. Don't line their pockets. If the players can find a way of putting that money out there into the community. And you know what? Maybe the government could turn around then and say, because you've taken, you know, we'll do that sort of after tax. You know, we'll sort of make an adjustment to your tax as well. So if you've put, you know, if you've raised 5 million between you, it's 5 million out of your wages without us having to take tax off it as well. Because that's the thing. Obviously, some of them are paying 40% tax or whatever. They're going to lose a big chunk. You know, even if they donated half the wages, it wouldn't, the amount that was left, wouldn't be half, would it? Because the tax was taken off. So it's about doing these big gestures. And I just think, you know, I'm worried that there's a kind of attempt to make football some kind of, villain in everything now, to kind of distract from, the stuff that's not working out right now. The way footballers have been singled out isn't great, because the people who are singling them out aren't all singling out, you know, the hedge fund managers who are making a mint, and the people who are doing all the short selling. Now there's lots of people profiting from this. Footballers haven't so much profited as they've not sort of put their hands in the pockets and taken a pay cut. So I think it would be good now if football kind of took this back and said, you know what, we're, as a community, as players, as fans, as all of us, the ones who are really into football for the right reasons, you know, we're not bad people and we want to help. And I think, you know, they can help. They need to move quickly and do it. And you know what? Distance themselves from these ruthless owners, you know, and show that that is not football. That's something else. That's business. That's not football.
Okay, but my point is, if they did take that pay cut, then why can't they pay that money pay the staff instead of being furloughed from the government?
That would be one way, yeah. I mean, that would be
that stewards that. And tea ladies and dinner and chefs do not earn thousands and thousands and thousands. So even if all your players who are on big money took a pay cut, easily pay their wages for 3-4 months. Easy. Yeah, yeah. So that was my point. And yes, you're right. And I did argue with my friend about this as well, and he said the same as you. The fact is they're being made out to be villains. That's not my point. I think if they were given the options, they would help. You know, most people in this world are decent humans and they would want to help. Footballers are no different, but you're right. You've got bankers in this country. There's loads of people that can help. That's for sure.
But I can imagine there's complications as well. I can imagine, I mean, I might be wrong and I might be being too cynical, but you can imagine there might be some football agents who are getting a cut of those wages, you know, and they're saying, well, you know, I still want my 20% or whatever I get. You know, I still want my income from you for sitting here and doing nothing. And they're not offering. So, but you know what? Let's name and shame people. Let's start getting all of this out in the open. If there's people doing that, people getting in the way. There are people struggling, you know, bit more than they need to. And I think there's people who could help, you know, make that struggle a bit less difficult.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, look, Jim, it's been brilliant. It's been an hour. I feel like it's been 10 minutes. We could just chat for ages. But also, you're on the Anfield Index, aren't you, podcast? And I was on there. I've done a couple of podcasts with them before I knew you. And they're a really great bunch. And I think podcasts at the moment, to keep us all going, to get us a little bit chatty about football, because we're not really there's nothing to chat. There's no one's really interested in transfers because nothing's happening, is it? We're all just on hold. We all want our football back. We all want our lives back. We all want everyone to be well and for this disgusting virus to literally F off, as they say, and just leave us all be. Well, Jim, all I can say is from the Highbury squad, thanks so much for chatting to me today. There's so many other things I could talk about, but we're time is up and we will have you back. That's for sure.
Thank you.
So that's it, everybody. That was my chat with Jim Baldwin from Liverpool. And all I want to say is you keep well. And I'd personally like to thank the NHS staff, the carers, the staff at the food shops, the delivery drivers, the shelf stackers, everybody that's keeping us going and keeping us safe. We all really appreciate you. And on that note, always Arsenal.